everybody knows about Google, right? How many people in here never heard about Google before? It is so well known, in fact, that the term Google has become a verb that we use when we want to search for something on the internet. Often haven't we heard someone say, "I Googled that yesterday." I would suspect that blind people use Google just about as much as everybody else. How many of us don't have Gmail addresses? And how many of us, as a matter of course, use Google for our search engine? When I first came across the Google website, I was struck by its simplicity and effectiveness as a search engine. But then, over time, Google began adding other services. Things like Google Maps, Google Calendar, Google Docs, Google Books, Gmail, and others. Some of you may remember that when Gmail first came out, the web interface was not as non-visually accessible as we might have wished. And when Google Books first came out, there was concern that we, the blind, would not have the same access to the books as everybody else. Some of you may remember a talk at last year's convention by TV Raman. I wasn't able to be at that talk, I'm sorry to say, about Google's efforts to make the text of non-copyrighted works available to us. When I attended the CSUN conference last spring, I heard about a lot of other things going on at Google aimed at improving access to its many services. Hence, our next speaker, one whom many of you will remember from years past, Loretta Guarino-Reed. Loretta is a member of Google's accessibility engineering team. Prior to joining Google, she was the accessibility team lead for Adobe Systems' Acrobat product. She is co-chair of the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines Working Group for W3C's Web Accessibility Initiative. Loretta has a PhD from Carnegie Mellon University and MS and BS degrees from Stanford University. Besides all of that, Loretta is a thoroughly delightful human being. And I ask you to give her a very warm welcome. Here's Loretta.
Thank you, Curtis. I managed to survive all those things and still remain a human being. I'm not quite sure how.
Hey, Jim. Good to see you.
And I want to commend Matt for having the courage to actually try to do a live demo.
It worked.
I brought my laptop up here, but it's only as a crutch. I'm just going to be talking to you today, and I'm going to talk a bit about. I think the first part of my talk is sort of hints and tips for some of our services, for some of our particular
applications. Yay! Ooh, all right.
In particular, I'm going to talk a bit about Gmail, and I'm going to talk about books, and then I'm going to spend more time talking about web applications, ARIA, and some very exciting work that TV Raman and Charles Chen are leading to try and, in fact, make web applications more usable. I am going to start out with my usual caveat. I can only discuss features that are currently available and shipping in our products. I can't talk about future plans. That's just
we'll respect
the way
that.
Things work. And our products are updated incrementally, and they're updated frequently. And it's sort of, in some that sense, that's the good news and the bad news. The good news is, in fact, there are features that will come out, every few weeks, every month. If you go check, there may be something new. But because they come out incrementally, it's sort of rare for us to sort of stand up and say, ta-da, look at this great new progress that we've made. So I may be sweeping a bunch of things that have happened over a long period of time together today. And say that the current state isn't exactly the last word. In fact, there were some things that I hoped I'd be able to talk about that didn't quite make the last push. Okay, so let me start by talking about some tips and hints for Gmail. Now, if you've used Gmail at all, you probably know that there are two versions of Gmail. There is the standard interface, and there is the basic HTML interface. And there's no question that the basic HTML interface is much more accessible than the standard interface, and it's sort of what we recommend that you use today. It uses no JavaScript at all. It uses very clean semantic HTML. We've done a few things to make it a little easier to get there and to stay there if you want to be using basic HTML. So the normal way of getting there is you go to the standard Gmail interface, and there's a link called basic HTML. And if you follow that link, it will then take you to the alternate interface. Well, this is sort of a nuisance to have to do every time you want to access your mail. So it turns out there's actually a UL that will take you directly to that page. I'll read it for you here. I've given Curtis the notes from my talk so that he can make them available electronically as well.
That's what you paid your $5 for.
So if you want to skip having to visit the standard interface, you can go to mail.google.com/mail/h/. And note that the trailing slash is very important. If you leave that off, mail work.
mail.google.com/mail/h/. Well, you could be a hero with that.
Loretta?
Yes?
How about www.gmail.com/basic? Wouldn't that be easier?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it would, but let me finish with the rest of the tips. It may not be so critical. The one other thing I'll throw in here is I don't know whether any of you work in places that use Google Apps, which is sort of a package you can install that provides these things for your own domain. There's also a URL that will work within that domain for getting you straight to the basic HTML page. And I guess if you want to know that, come talk to me later. So when you get to the basic HTML page, you'll know you're there because it will say you are currently viewing google.com mail in basic HTML. There's now a link on that page which says set basic HTML as default view. So if you can get yourself there once and you click that link, then you can just go to mail.google.com and it will take you to the HTML.
Is that tied to the computer or the user ID?
That should be tied to the user ID.
Aha, okay, wonderful. So once I've done it on one machine, I don't have to do it ever again.
Right, so that will become your default. So as I say, hopefully this will make it just less painful to get to that interface and stay in that interface.
So your user ID?
Well, you have to have been logged in to Gmail before you can get to any of these pages.
I mean after.
Well, the mail.google.com/mail/h. You're not logged in yet, are you, when you do that?
No. If you weren't logged in, it'll take you to log in.
Right, you log in, and then when you're up, it comes up as a standard HTML. Okay.
Right.
Or a basic HTML. Okay.
Right.
But after that, it's a switch.
And after that, you just flip a switch, and it's permanent. Yay.
It's permanent.
Okay.
And then, of course, if the login screen is not accessible, then you need it.
Curtis, it's only inaccessible for Unix users. Okay, go on.
So those are sort of the new conveniences for getting to the HTML page. The other things we've been doing have been trying to make sure that the functionality is more on par with the standard interface. So, for instance, we added POP and IMAP support. You can get at that through the settings page from the basic HTML page now as well.
Yes.
And so, in fact, if you don't want to fuss with this at all, you can just set it just to be your back end for your mail and use your favorite desktop front end. We've done things like we've added access keys and section headers to try to make it easier to navigate around on the page. We've added accessibility support for things like labels. Do people know what labels are in Gmail?
Yes.
Okay, that's sort of our equivalent of folders. The ability to create filters is now available through the basic HTML page. There's multi-account support. So as I say, I think we're still not completely caught up, but we've been trying to make sure that this interface is an equal citizen. So in addition, we are in fact trying to improve the accessibility of the standard interface because it's always, any time that there are two different versions, it's hard to keep them in sync. And so the more that we can make the standard interface directly accessible, the better. The trouble is, because it's a web application, we're depending on Way Aria. How many people here are familiar with Aria? Should I talk about Aria, or do people already know?
I think you might want to talk about it a little bit.
Okay. So Way Aria is a standard that's still in development, that essentially augments HTML with additional information that will make it easier for assistive technology to expose that information in a sensible way. So Way Aria, for instance, defines a number of roles and a number of states that can be given to different objects on your HTML page. You know, so that, in fact, if you're implementing a menu or a tree using JavaScript and underlying HTML, that can be identified so the screen reader can, in fact, let you interact with it in a sensible way. Another thing that Way Aria is providing is something called Live Regions. Lots of JavaScript-driven web applications are dynamic in their content. They will change part of the page rather than rebuilding an entire page. There are lots of really good things about that, but it's something that the technology has a hard time dealing with and translating. But by providing some markup that makes it a little bit easier to do something sensible. So the improvements that we're making to the standard interface are using, in many cases, the Aria support. And as I say, we are trying to make improvements, but we realize that there's still a really long way to go before the standard interface is completely accessible. There is improved keyboard navigation. And you, in fact, it always actually had pretty good keyboard navigation, but it is being improved. And you can find out what keyboard commands are available using a shift question mark. Or you can look up keyboard shortcuts in the Help Center for Gmail to find out how to use a keyboard to interact with Gmail. Now, keyboard support is a setting, and it is off by default. So in order to be able to drive the standard interface from the keyboard, you first got to get yourself to the settings and turn on keyboard support. So additional improvements have been made to the standard interface have been adding headings to identify the different sections of the web application, again, to make it a little bit easier to navigate around this reasonably complex page. I will warn you that the heading for what is we all think of as the inbox, where the messages are, is called conversations.
Oh, okay.
Just as I say, tips and hints. Okay, so those are my sets of tips and hints about Gmail. Let me spend a little time talking about books. Curtis mentioned that we announced a year ago that we were making some of the books available in the text form. I want to talk a lot about the issues around that, which books are available, how to find them, and how to use the user interface, because it's not immediately obvious, shall we say. So the first thing I wanted to say about books was that the goal of the books service was to help people find the books that they wanted, as opposed to actually making those books available to them. So a lot of what you'll see about the design of that site is oriented toward how can I identify a book that I want, and then how can I find a library or the bookstore or what have you that will let me get my hands on it. Now, for you, that's perhaps not so useful. If you could get your hands on the paper book, it wouldn't probably do you a lot of good. But there you go. That's sort of built into a lot of what you see. And as we know, in order to be able to search the books, we had to do a lot of scanning and get our hands on the text. And so the potential was there for reading online, and it was very frustrating to feel like it was so close and yet so far. So one of the issues that Google has with trying to make those books available are, of course, copyright issues. Even for what we were doing in the first place, we were getting a lot of grief from authors about the intellectual rights around their text. And so we're trying to be very careful and make sure that we're respecting everybody's copyright and their intellectual properties. So let's talk a little bit about what's going on in terms of copyright. In the U.S., any books published before 1923 are just assumed to be out of copyright. That's the way our laws are written. If you sort of do the arithmetic, I think it's not possible. So if it's before then, but if books are published in other countries, then we go and look at what the laws are in that country about copyright. So the rules about when copyrights expire are going to be on a country-by-country basis. Now, books published after 1923 in the U.S. may or may not be in copyright. And one of the big problems we have is it's actually often really hard to get anybody to answer the question as to what the status is. But we tend to be conservative in our interpretation. If we can't convince ourselves that it's out of copyright, then we will assume that it's under copyright. For books that are in the public domain, the book's pages may have a download feature. Usually have a download feature. In this case, the books will be available in a text form as well as in a page image form. The page image form is what's there by default. And in this case, all the pages will be available, all the text of each page will be available. I mean, it's all there in text form. This was a scanning process. Scanning processes have quality problems. If you run into quality problems in one of these books, there's actually a way to report it. On the page that you're reading, you go to the About This Book, you follow the About This Book link, and on that page, there will be a Provide Feedback link. And I guess I would encourage you, if you find problems that should be fixed, report them back to us. It'll help us get things cleaned up and get them more usable. Not all books that are in the public domain have the download feature. We are adding support as quickly as we can, but it's just not all there yet. But the goal really is that every book that we can make available this way, we will make available. So for books that are still under copyright, basically there is not a text view. There are sort of two classes of such books. If the author or the publisher is a member of our partner program, then they can, in fact, provide permission for more than sort of the default. They can provide permission to display a limited preview, maybe a few pages, generally maybe up to 20%, although they can give permission to more if they agree. But in any case, that preview is still not a text view. It's still a page image view. And if the author's not in our partner program, then at most that we will display about the book are the snippets that show you what matched. There will sort of be no text available. So books are the books that are available through this service are in all different kinds of states, as you can see, and clearly the books you're going to be most interested in are the ones for which there are full text versions available. How do you find them in this sea of books in various states? Well, there is a way of filtering when you search for a book, which three classes of books will match. There are books that have a full view. Those are the ones which may have a text version. They're the ones that have a limited view or the ones that have no preview. So clearly what you'd like to do to at least narrow the field and make it more likely you've got an accessible book is get rid of the ones that are only limited view or no preview. So there are a couple different ways that you can filter the search. One is that you can use the advanced search page. And the advanced search page includes a place where you can indicate which views you're interested in matching. Or if you've already done a search for the book, you can then do the filter after the fact. On the results page, there will be, I think it's a drop-down box to select which views you'd like to filter on. And so there you can tell, just show me the full view. So you can at least get thrown out of the search all the results that you know aren't going to be text views. Unfortunately, you still aren't guaranteed that because they're text views that there's going to be a download feature. At that point, unfortunately, the best you can do is go give it a try. If you open the book, there are a couple different ways you can tell whether or not it's got a text view. One is, in fact, there will be a link near the beginning that says accessible version for screen readers. That'll be there on any that have a text view. Or there, somewhere on the page, there will be a link that says view full text. So this is still not a wonderful way to identify books that have text views, but this should make it a little easier than simply doing a search and walking through every book and trying to see whether or not it's got text. Okay, so presumably now that you've located a book for which there's a text version, how to negotiate the book's UI. there are two, as I've been discussing, there are two different ways that we serve up the books. One is a page view of the book, and the other is the text view of the book. Essentially, on any page, you will have a link to get you to the other view. So if you happen to be on the image view view of the book, there will be a view page text link that you can use to get yourself there. And vice versa, if you're on the text view and you want to get back to the image view for some reason, there's a view page image link. So look for those links to get back and forth from those. Clearly, you're always going to be interested in trying to get to the text view, I would say. Oh, well, the one caveat there is if there are people with low vision, we highlight the search terms that matched, that made us think that this book was interesting. Those highlights only show up on the image view. Now, in addition to there being two versions of the book content itself, there are also two versions of user interface, just to make things additionally difficult. And this is essentially all the Chrome that's around the book itself. So the things that give you additional information, that give you the command buttons for manipulating the book. So there's an AJAX view called the standard mode, and there's a plain HTML view. There's a limited magnification function that's available, but it's only available in standard mode, in this AJAX mode. I think it provides them a magnification up to about 2 times. So if you need limited magnification, then you may be interested in standard mode. The plain HTML interface, again, uses no JavaScript, and it provides a number of keyboard navigation commands. So there are keyboard navigation commands for going to the next or previous page in the book. You can use either the space key, you can use the arrow keys, page up or page down, or P or N, all kinds of different ways to sort of leaf through the book backwards or forward. There's also an access key, S, for going to the search box, if you want to search for something different. And there are various headings on the page for identifying the different sections. So the book title itself will be marked as a heading 2. The different navigation areas on the page will be marked as header 3s to help you to orient around the page. Okay, so two different ways of looking at books, two different kinds of user interfaces. The default is page image and standard mode. Probably neither of which you really want. If you take that initial link that was at the beginning of the page that said, I'm trying to remember what it says, accessible version for screen readers, that will automatically take you to the text view of the book and the HTML view of the UI. So that's sort of a shortcut for getting where you probably get. I'm going to put a caveat here. This is except if you're running in Firefox 3. I'll be talking more about that in the rest of the talk, about what happens in Firefox 3 and why that's different. Okay, so that's a very long explanation of if you're trying to read a book on Google Books, how do you find it, and then how are you actually able to access it once you found it. And I'm sorry that it's such a complicated story, but I at least wanted to make sure that you knew the complicated story in case you wanted to use it. Okay, so that's the end of the hints and tips section about our, say, a couple of our most popular applications. What I want to talk about now is, in general, web applications, Way Area, and a library called AccessJax that T.V. Roman and Charles Chen are developing. So we talked a little bit earlier about ARIA, what it was, and what problems it's trying to solve. Web 2.0 really is a new paradigm which provides a kind of power and flexibility and performance in the web that is quite different from the static pages of the past. And it's sort of what's enabled the spread of web applications. But it does not mesh well with the traditional screen reader models of how to interact with the web page, which has caused many, many headaches. So Way Area is a way of trying to at least provide additional assistance to take a run at that problem. One of the things about web applications is that they are driven by scripting. And this means it's actually often fairly important that the application itself handle keystroke commands. This is assuming that, of course, first we've managed to beat the developers into adding the keyboard access as well as the mouse access. But activating the controls can actually have a fairly drastic impact on the underlying content. So it's not always the case that simply having a way to tab to something and activate it will give you the right model. And so this really changes the way that we approach how to provide accessibility to some of these pages. So ARIA, while it's not yet a standard, is, to me, making absolutely miraculous progress in terms of being accepted and implemented. The reason for the acceptance for Firefox 3 in the last section of the talk is because Firefox 3, which was just released a few weeks ago, does have support for ARIA, for the current version of ARIA. And so it's actually possible to try to start using it to implement some of these some of this support. But to me, the amazing thing, after all my years in software development, is to see how much support is coming, how soon. So IE8 has announced they will be supporting ARIA. Opera 9, Safari, and WebKit have announced they're going to be supporting ARIA. We know that some of the AT vendors are working on ARIA support, so JAWS, WindowEyes, and ZoomText, for instance, and that there are JavaScript libraries that are developed for web applications that are also incorporating ARIA support. So the Dojo Toolkit and the Google Web Toolkit are two examples where we're sort of starting to see this come in. Now, given my knowledge of how slowly things can move in software development, this is a miracle that all these different pieces look like they're coming together in a relatively short time frame. So that's, in fact, really, really good news. So AccessJax is a library that we've been developing at Google to try to assist authors in providing accessibility features in dynamic web applications. But it really depends on having ARIA support in the browser that it's running in. So we're really pushing the envelope here because, in fact, as I say, the first official release of this was only a couple of weeks ago. One thing that this means is that, of course, we're doing a lot of experimenting internally, but I think it's really important that we get some feedback from real users because we're looking at, again, a real paradigm shift in the way that we interact with these web pages, and I think it's critical that sort of before it gets frozen as well, that we get some real end users trying it out. But it is going to take some investment because it is different. So I guess this is my appeal. If any of you are feeling adventurous and want to dive into this, we could really use people who go in, put the time in to try out some of the enhancements we've been doing, and give us feedback about, yes, this is really the right direction, but here's where I have problems in this, or no, this is you've overlooked the issue, but things that only you will really be able to tell us by getting in there and trying to use them. So the AJAX model, or AccessJax model, really is not that we've marked things up and then there's a system of technology that's essentially putting together a completely different user interface, but that the author himself really has responsibility for designing this keyboard-driven user interface that's going to be producing voice output. So the author, in fact, should be implementing keyboard commands and should be looking at the workflow. So it's not just that you want a keyboard command for every control that's on the page, but you'd really like to think about how do I expect my user to be using this application, and what can I do to make that usage pattern more natural, more comfortable. So in addition to thinking carefully about what keyboard commands to provide, AccessJax provides ways for authors to actually put together the text that they'd like spoken. So it's not just a matter of here's the checkbox and here's this label, but in fact it may be the case that I know, because this is a calendar application, that the following number is a date, and I can construct from the information that I know where to find the rest of the information that will make it sound like a date. But the author has a way to sort of augment the information that's going to be provided, and do it in based on really knowledge of this is the context I'm in. Whereas a screen reader has got to work everywhere, it's much more difficult for it to provide that kind of tailored support. And then the other thing that AccessJax really is designed, understanding that there is dynamically changing content on the page, that you want to know about it in different ways. There's a feature of ARIA called Live Regions that provide a way of both saying this is some content which is going to change dynamically based on something else that has happened. And furthermore, here are some hints that from me, the author, about how critical I think it's going to be for the blind user to get this quickly, as opposed to this is information that in fact shouldn't interrupt whatever somebody's doing right now. So you can sort of give levels of priority of how urgent is it to know about this change. Okay, so given all of these underlying shifts in the assumption about what the author's doing, AccessJax applications, and in fact this is probably true of lots of AJAX applications, want to be working in what we think of as forms mode, not MSA mode, in the mode where in fact the application itself is getting keystrokes directly. This is a really big shift. I mean, this really is a paradigm shift, and this is why, in fact, we really need users to get in, take that leap, because I think it's a pretty difficult leap after you've really learned effectively how to use your screen reader to orient yourself around a web page today. Give up all those things that you know about how to use web pages and try this approach. See how it works.
Okay.
Some clues about how to get going, though, because, in fact, I was finding myself having a lot of trouble getting the scripts. It's important that you be out of forms mode before you load the page that includes the AccessJax support.
Out or in?
You've got to be out before you load that page.
Forms mode has to be turned off.
That's right.
Which is normal.
No, you've got to be in forms mode.
All in forms mode.
You've got to be in forms mode.
All right.
So this is a very unnatural act, right?
Yes.
So in JAWS, insert ZZ.
Right, turn it off. Turn the virtual cursor off.
Pages.
Yeah.
So you've got to remember to do that first, and then go to the page.
No, he said turn it off for all pages. Do you want it on?
She's turning the virtual cursor off for all pages.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, I find myself getting really tangled up in the vocabulary, particularly because the different
screen readers have different
names for all these things.
Yeah. it's the virtual cursor that the screen reader uses to the page.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
The non-buffered mode, is that what you're saying?
The non-buffered mode, thank you, Brad.
Whatever you call it.
Okay. So whatever it takes to get yourself into that mode, do that first, then go to the web application. And then in fact the AccessJax script for that page will be loaded. This is all assuming you're in an ARIA-supported environment, which today means Firefox 3. And then you can try out these the new commands. I've got some now. The convention that we've used in the scripts we've developed is that question mark will always give you a list of commands available.
Okay.
So the right thing to do is go to the page and type question mark to find out then what you can do there. And if question mark doesn't give you a list of commands, then something has gone wrong. And either you've ended up back in the wrong mode and the script didn't get loaded, or the page needs to get refreshed. We're out there. Yeah, we're living on the edge, folks. Sorry. There is information available for writing these scripts. And I've got it in but I think for now, let's just focus on using them. Okay, so a couple of Google applications today have AccessJax support built into them. So they're using these libraries to try to provide the support. So if you open these applications in Firefox 3, you will be running in this environment. This is all assuming, of course, that you've gotten yourself into forms mode.
you're right.
I need some new word that I can use that you will all understand. So one of the applications that has this built in already is Google Reader. Google Reader is a feed reader, so it's great for pulling new information from lots of websites of interest, which is really nice. You don't have to go out there and find the information. It's coming to you after you've identified it. So when you open Google Reader, there will be a link up near the top which says, click here for ARIA Enhanced Google Reader. If you are in forms mode.
If you're in the proper mode.
Right, in the proper mode. And you click that link, then that will take you to the version that, in fact, has these additional keyboard commands available for you. And the keyboard commands will let you do things like go to the next or previous feed, or within a feed, go to the next or previous item. And it will, of course, start reading the item as soon as you go to it. There are commands that will let you share or email or view an article. But again, a set of commands that are very much oriented toward the workflow that says, I am a feed reader, and what you are doing is trying to read feeds. And here are our direct commands for doing those things, rather than having to tab around or find the appropriate markup on the page to get you to where you're trying to get to. So Google Reader is one of the applications where this is built in. Another application where it's built in is Google Books. And in Google Books, that link that I talked about on the first page, it says accessible version for screen readers.
Don't use it.
Well, if you are in Firefox 3, that is going to then take you to the AccessJax version instead of taking you to the text version and the HTML version of Google Books. Now, the AccessJax version is still, of course, going to be a text version of the book. We clearly agreed that we need that. But it's going to take you to the standard mode of the user interface because, in fact, AccessJax wants to be able to drive all those scripts that are written there. Once you're there, you'll have additional keyboard commands available to you that are much more oriented toward recognizing that what you're trying to do is search for and read books. So, for instance, there will be commands for going to, when you've done your search and you've got a list of different search results for the books, there are commands that will take you from one result to the next. Furthermore, if you reach the bottom of the page of the first set of results and you ask to go to the next, it will automatically load the next page of results and take you to the first one there. So you never even know that you're having to cross page boundaries. Whereas today it's pretty awkward if you reach the bottom and you want to get the next page. Similarly, there are commands for reading the page, the book a page at a time, and there are commands for navigating to some of to the search field and to the about book items for this page. So again, I'm not going to go into great detail into what the commands are, but I really encourage you to go try these out and see, in fact, if this really does work better. Now, those are two products where we've actually built the support into the product already. Robin and Charles have been doing a lot of this in prototype, which is great for going off to experiment, and they set up a site where, in fact, if you're interested, you can download the script for some of the things that they've been prototyping where they aren't built in, and you can try them out as well. So there are, if you search for AccessJax, which is AccessJax, that will take you to the public, this is an open source library, and there's a site on the Google and code.google.com that contains all the AccessJax support. And there are also instructions for different ways that you can essentially turn on support for having their prototype scripts downloaded into different applications. So again, if you're feeling even more adventurous and want to try things out, there are a couple of different ways of doing that. If you use Firefox, which is Charles' Firefox plugin that does voice output, it actually has a checkbox which says site-specific enhancements. You just check that checkbox and you're done. That's probably the easiest way to do it if you happen to have Firefox already. Otherwise, there's a way that you can install it by installing GreaseMonkey. and then there's a way of installing a GreaseMonkey script that we'll also know about installing these site-specific scripts. And there's a way of installing the bookmarklet for AccessJax enhancements. So anyway, if you use one of these mechanisms for getting these scripts installed, then when you go to the page, the additional AccessJax support will be available for you. And a couple of things they've prototyped are scripts for Google Search. I was talking about the book search. These are similar sorts of functions that are available for general search. So you can quickly navigate through search results, automatically skipping across page boundaries. You can quickly navigate to the search box or the next or previous page. You can cycle through related searches, alternate categories, or sponsored links if you actually want to go see the ads and know that what you're getting are the ads. There's a way of doing that. And there's a command that will let you switch between regular search and the accessible search experiment that Rahman did a few years back, where the accessible search experiment will reorder the search results to try to sort of give higher rank to things that are more accessible. So again, you quickly and easily switch to using that. Another script that they developed is for Gmail. So if you're trying to use the Gmail standard interface instead of the HTML interface, this provides a lot of keyboard commands for letting you manipulate your mail. You want to go to the next or previous conversation, the next or previous message in a conversation. You can select the current conversation and you can star it, you can mute it, you can report it as spam, move it to trash, or archive it. So you can do all those things just with a simple keyboard command, as opposed, again, to having to select it and then find your way to the control that would normally do that action. Keyboard commands for composing new messages, doing replies, and so forth and so on.
Cool.
Again, I refer you to go check out what the commands are using the question mark command. But again, this is very much an attempt to try to make a web application feel more like a desktop application in the way that you interact with it. Okay, and then just my last plug is how to contact us. We've set up a Google group. That's groups.google.com/groups/accessible. This is a group for discussing accessibility issues in Google products. So, we're on that group, and if you send things to it, you can both share both complaints or exciting discoveries with other users, or you can send us anything you want us to know, complaints, requests. And the way you do that is by mailing to accessible@googlegroups.com. But you can only mail there if you've already joined the group.
Right.
Okay, so that's what I had to say about what sorts of things have been happening at Google these days.
Carl Smith.
Carl.
This morning was going to sign up for a Google account. Somebody said if I did that, I could get Gmail, other things, and I got down to the CAPTCHA thing that it wanted me to.
Oh, it's beautiful, Carl.
And it was lovely. And I hit the listen, and I tell you what, you could have fooled me if it said anything I was understood.
You need headphones for that.
Well, I have headphones, and it sounds like it's underwater in some sort of space alien. And so I said, just hit the email, if you have trouble, link, and I wrote a help message, and it came back and said, if somebody wants to set this account up, email, reply to this if you want to, but how come they, I know they try to keep the automated recognition software from recognizing it, but I don't know if anybody can hear that stuff.
Yep.
This is a case where the march of technology is really working against us.
Yes.
It is getting harder and harder to come up with anything to distinguish a human being from
a machine.
A machine.
Yep.
And unfortunately, the spammers have there's a lot of payback for them for investing a lot in cracking these things. And so trying to find something that continues to be workable by human beings but isn't crackable by the spammers is becoming more and more difficult, and that's exactly what you're running into there. I don't know what's going to happen here. I don't have good feelings about it, though.
I will say this, and I don't know how. It'd be nice to take a poll or something of the rest of us in the room who have had experience with Google CAPTCHA. First of all, I think Lorenz's point is well taken. The audio CAPTCHA, as I choose to call it, is being attacked probably just as much as the visual one, if not more. Why? I don't know why more. Is it because of the novelty of the thing?
It's easier to
track. It is. And so I recognize why you have to obfuscate the sound just like you obfuscate the vision. And it's been I've used it, the audio CAPTCHA, and you have to plug away at it a couple times, and you have to recognize, I think what it's asking for are just numbers, which makes it a little easier, but I'm sure after a while a spammer attacker will figure that out too. How many of you guys have actually got the audio CAPTCHA to work? Okay, so you are at a different...
I have too. So Carl, I don't want to disrespect what you said, and I don't want to say that anything negative about you, because you had a bad experience, and I think Loretta should know that you had a bad experience. I gather, Loretta, that the email thing will eventually help him out of his jam, and somebody will get back to him or something. Is that how that's supposed to work? You want to answer?
I believe so, but I actually have to confess I'm not as knowledgeable about all those paths as I should be. I will say I was doing some testing of the audio captures recently, and by no means was I able to get them all.
Either.
Who's
Matt?
Does that
have the option?
Wait, hold on. What, Curtis? Wait,
does
no.
Does that have the option to request a replacement?
No.
String? See, a lot of them do have. So if you can't understand one, if you go through two or three, you probably find.
Yeah, you can.
Yes, you can.
Replace your policy, and then you get a new one. So in other words, you get three tries, and then you get a new one.
Yeah. Who was asking for the floor?
Question. Talk.
No, wait. Somebody with a follow-up.
Yeah, Matt.
Matt.
Yeah.
Okay, Matt. Yeah, I know. I got Rich. But he can wait.
So
I'll get to him.
Sorry, I'll be quick. When I was at W3C, I wrote a paper called Inaccessibility of CAPTCHA, and a lot of the issues that I raised there are still there and getting worse. It has gotten to the point that the visual CAPTCHAs are to the point where people with perfect vision still cannot defeat them. So you're gaining a lot of brothers in arms here. I think that there are a few different the schemes that are in place, things like two-factor validation, where you're going to have someone send a text message to your phone that you'll then re-enter into the site.
There's $1,000 I got to spend for that.
But there are multiple different things, and the issue is that it's a cat and mouse game. There really isn't going to be anything until you can insert your DNA into a system.
Right.
And even then, there are still 3 billion people on the other side of the world that have their own unique DNA that will still be valuable. So unfortunately, it's a problem that doesn't really have a great solution. But CAPTCHA is becoming increasingly more difficult to justify as the sole solution.
Good point. Now let me say about CAPTCHA, because I think this applies to both Adobe and
everybody,
Google.
AOL.
Yeah, AOL is here too.
MSN.
I want to say one thing.